So welcome to the first episode of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Mike Saunders.
And I'm Andrew Gregory.
We plan to release a new episode of the podcast every 2 weeks or so, always free, always from tuxradar.com. So make sure and check it out. And of course, we're also doing news, features, and more on Tux Radar. So bookmark it. So in this episode of the podcast, KDE 4.2 is released, but Torvalds switches to GNOME. Is it okay to run free software on a non-free OS? Mono, the devil's vomit, or not? And of course, a fantastic subscriptions deal for those who are lucky and plucky enough to wait until the end of the episode. So let's start with the news. Obviously, the top news the last couple of weeks, KDE 4.2 has been released. What do you reckon, guys?
It's been a long time coming. I think it's probably what 4.0 should have been, but the KDE team could never have admitted at the time that it was going to take an extra 2-3 years. I'm glad it's here.
Didn't someone say that 4.1 was the 4.0 that should,
yeah, I think
should
that, have been? I think I might have said that at the time. But
oh, okay, there we go then.
So 4.2 is the new 4.1.
Yeah.
So when 4.4 comes out, then I'll be ready to use it, I guess.
Yeah, well, they'll be working on 5 but by then.
What are the new features, roughly?
I think the best new feature has got to be stability, because for the first time in the 4 revision, my desktop feels stable. It doesn't crash all the time, and plasmoids become usable. And there are a few plasmoids that are useful.
Is desktop crashing KDE's fault or Graham's fault?
Yeah, have you been able to customize it enough yet to break it?
It's probably a bit of both.
It seems a bit too late. Also in the news, of course, is Linus Torvalds switching from KDE to GNOME, despite having previously laughed greatly at GNOME. He's now dumped KDE completely. He says it's a complete disaster.
Wasn't the original quote, "just use KDE, idiots," something like
he
that?
He said there is a huge difference between being easy to use and only being easy to use, on the grounds that that's what GNOME normally does. It sort of ties your hands, you can't really do very much. But now he's decided that 4.0 was such a disaster, he's given up on it because his right mouse button doesn't work properly.
Now, you would think that Torvalds would be canny enough to be able to compile an SVN version of KDE and at least be using 4.2, or considering that, instead of saying, 4.0 is a disaster, and I...
Well, you say that, but I'm fairly sure I've read an interview with him saying he only compiles a few things from source himself.
Really?
The things he actually uses day to day. So, you know, the build tools he'll have the latest versions of, obviously the kernel and a few other small things, Git, presumably.
Yes.
But the most of it, the rest of it, he just takes an RPM like the rest of us does, because he hasn't got the patience or the time or whatever to be doing compilations of KDE.
Linus is such a celebrity that...
Such a celebrity,
obviously, in the Linux world, that I think he should kind of engineer an elaborate trolling operation and tell everybody he uses TWM, Torvalds Window Manager, and then people would want to see it and use it.
I think he's got a point, though. I think KDE 4 has been broken for a long time, and if you really want to be productive, it's best to switch to another desktop where it has been for the last 18 months or so. Especially if you're used to 3.5 features. I mean, I still use Conqueror in the same way as I did in 3.5, so I'm essentially using 3.5.
But I don't get why Torvalds needs the desktop anyway. I thought it'd be fine with just an Xterm and Telnet and Netcat, you know.
Telepathy.
Yeah, basically. It's,
Midnight Commander.
Yes, absolutely. If that, even.
Well, also in the news, of course, sticking with the kernel, Fedora is going to be using ext4 as default, from Fedora 11, with, I think, Ubuntu Jaunty 9.04. It'll be optional.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys have already seen the news reports. People are very impressed how fast ext4 already is. I think we should have a news story on the site by now, our own amazing benchmarks on ext4. Have you guys tried it, heard much about it?
I haven't tried it. I've heard all these figures and stats being thrown around, how it's going to be super duper ultra fast, but how that will manifest itself in real world desktop use, I guess we'll see. But it does have a maximum file size of 16 terabytes, so I can now finally flack encode Satie's vexations.
Is there a lot of harmonic content in that?
I couldn't describe it.
Make sure and check out the podcast notes for a link to the benchmark. And of course, the other big news story recently, Qt has gone LGPL, which means a great deal for Qt developers. Graham? What does it actually mean? In 10 seconds?
In 10 seconds, well, like GNOME itself, actually, the LGPL means that people can develop commercial applications and keep their source code closed using Qt, which previously they needed a commercial license for.
Two. You had 2 seconds spare there.
Yeah. Well,
He's that good. Yeah. Yes. But I understand it that you still have to buy a commercial license beforehand. You can't start with LGPL and then switch to commercial like you might think would be possible. You have to start with a commercial license. Is that correct?
The I think what you're explaining is the Qt commercial license. Hmm. And yes, if you want to buy Qt support, if you want to have use the Qt commercial version of the API, you need to start with the Qt commercial version. You can't use either the LGPL version or the GPL version of Qt and switch. That is a restriction in Nokia Trolltech's own licensing for their commercial version. It's nothing to do with LGPL or the GPL.
Right. Does it really make much of a difference for people? It was on GPL before, it's now LGPL. As far as we're concerned, it's free software.
I think it brings Qt in line with GTK Plus. It's more flexible, there's no doubt about it, and if it helps spread Qt to a wider user base, then I think that's a good thing.
Well, presumably that's their plan, isn't it? Nokia's grand plan. Is it call it Qt Everywhere or something they call it?
Yeah. I don't know how people will feel who have paid the thousands of pounds for a commercial Qt license when they could have perhaps used the LGPL one, but that's something that Nokia have got to balance with their customers. It's now time for our Hot Topic section. This is where we all talk about the contentious issue that has arisen in the open source free software community over the last week or so. This week's Hot Topic is thanks to KDE 4.2 now running tentatively on the Windows platform. Do we think it's a good idea that free software runs on proprietary operating systems? Mike?
Yes, a definite yes. Yeah, the idea that we can switch people, we can convert people over to Linux by changing the operating system from underneath them, I think is mad. That's too big a switch. If we can introduce people to free software, say, look, here's Firefox, look, here's OpenOffice, you don't have to throw away, you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Well, you can try new free software. So, you know, I can understand some people's concerns, but it life just doesn't work like that.
Do you think it makes people less likely to move to a more trusted platform such as Linux?
No, I think once you start to realize that you can get good quality software for free, then that's going to encourage you even more. Yeah, you know, if you give somebody Linux and you throw Linux on their computer, as great as it is alien for them. It is, you know, they're going to get confused. But if you can slowly move them over bit by bit.
But also, why would they want to move? Let's say you're a Mac user, and you get some free software, Firefox or OpenOffice.org or whatever, it works really well. As far as you're concerned, it's freeware. It's not free software, it's just freeware.
Yeah. Yeah.
It works great. And some guy comes along and says, hey, you should have Linux. It's really good and free. Do you care? Are you going to switch?
Well, it's easier to advocate the benefits of Linux over Windows in the stability and security in aspects, which is harder to do with a Mac because the operating system is Unix. But still, when it comes along in a couple of years' time, when you've got to go out and buy OS 10.7, then, you know, for £70 or whatever, Linux becomes a bit more attractive.
I think the real problem is, though, that it takes energy away from what I feel should be spent in real free software development. I'm not sure who's doing the 4.2 port to Windows. Those people could be working on new applications or filling in the Okanadi layer on the KDE 4.2 desktop rather than attracting what must be a minority of people who want to run KDE 4 applications on Windows.
I know what you're saying, and I've kind of held the argument that previously myself, but I've come to the conclusion it's flat out stupid on the grounds that someone said ages ago to me, you know, Bristol Zoo, our local zoo, are running sponsor a penguin plan. Where you can sponsor a penguin. Of course, we like penguins, you know, and this old Tux radar thing. So why don't we sponsor a penguin? And I said, how can you sponsor a penguin when there are children starving and blah, 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 blah. And the response was quite simply, well, someone has to look after the penguins as well. You know, think of the penguins. And it's the same problem here. You could very easily say, you know, stop working on 15 different web browsers and all work on Firefox. But by having, you know, more flexibility, more choice, more ability, I know, to run on Windows, your KDE, whatever, I think we grow as an ecosystem.
Well, yeah, and of course, if people want to put their own time into making KDE applications run on Windows, that's great. I mean, I run open source applications on Windows as well. It's just, especially when KDE4 is broken, I think the energy could be spent doing more productive work fixing it.
But that's developers scratching their own itch, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
presumably
yeah,
if you
yeah.
said, oh, don't work on KDE for Windows or certain free software things for other operating systems, they wouldn't suddenly run along and go, ah, right, well, I'll fix all these really annoying, tricky, niggling little bugs in KDE, because that's boring.
They may do nothing at all.
What about on embedded devices such as network-attached storage boxes, which now seem to all provide iTunes streaming, movie streaming, Samba shares, all thanks to open source development, all thanks to Linux, which barely ever gets a mention and barely gets an installer.
Or NetBSD.
Yeah, or NetBSD, yeah. I mean, is that a good thing? I mean, the fact is that Linux seems, open source seems to be secreted away in some part of the operating system.
Well, that's fine. You know, this debate comes up quite a lot. If the developers are not happy with their software ending up in a little box with only a mention of the GPL in the documentation, then choose another license. You know, people say, oh, nobody should sell GPL software and make money from it. No, the GPL allows that. If you really don't want your software to end up in these places, choose some convoluted license that's very specific and saying you can't put it here, there, or everywhere.
But isn't it important that we try and create some momentum so that there's more and more open source free software development? If it is just hidden in a box somewhere, that's not doing too much to promote it.
Yeah,
well, just being there promotes it, and that's the point, isn't it? It doesn't have to be there and woohoo, it's there to have a celebration. Just the fact that everything we're using, discreetly or otherwise, is actually built on free software, that's a huge step forward. That's what, you know, Stallman's original goal was. He wants free printer drivers or whatever. It doesn't matter. For most people, it's there. They don't want drivers that are open, but the rest of us, if we ever do want it, it's there.
Yeah, but what worries me is that people using Firefox, people using OpenOffice, people using small NAS boxes in the corner of the room aren't necessarily going to have any awareness whatsoever.
Why should they have to?
They shouldn't have to. You can't see it. Radio is not a visual medium, but there's a table in front of me, and I don't have a clue what wood it's made out of. But it's there.
And do you think that would have a positive or negative impact on people using free software in the future, if they have some kind of awareness of what it is or they don't have?
I think some people need to be aware, but the vast majority of users don't need to.
Is it important that people know that Firefox is secure, particularly because it's open source?
No, they just need to know that.
Is it any more secure because it's open source?
Well, really? I feel more secure using Firefox because it's open source.
Oh. The whole, you know, giving enough eyeballs, all bugs are shadow thing,
yeah.
Clearly lies.
But what would you do then, Graham, to fight this? What would you do? Because the way I see it, if free software started having clauses in its licenses to stop it ending up in these little NAS boxes, then the vendors of these machines will just go and get VXWorks or some, you know...
They'll put some stripped-down version of Windows on, and the thing will cost 50 quid more in the shop.
Well, there's obviously nothing I can do, and I don't really want to do anything about it. I am glad that open-source software is being used. It's the terms of the license. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Maybe what you want is the old BSD advertising clause.
yeah, maybe.
Coming up now, Discovery of the Week, which is our chance to share tips and software and all sorts of cool stuff we found over the last 7 days. So, Paul, what have you got?
I have got C# Ripple, which is ultimately very cool.
Ripple?
Ripple.
Ripple, okay.
Read, eval, print, loop.
Ah.
Should we set off alarm bells in your head if you're a coder like me? It's basically, you know, the interactive Python shell?
Yeah.
You type away, press enter, it parses it as Python, executes it straight away. Good stuff. It's that with C#.
Right.
Obviously, usually a compiled language. It's still compiled, but it obviously runs interactively.
So it's compiled on a per line basis?
Yeah, as soon as you hit semicolon,
yeah,
it reads the command statement and executes it, which is very, very cool because obviously it means you can run multi-line commands, just type and don't press semicolon. So you can type that, type for loops, whatever you want. It obviously remembers the state you've produced so far. So you can, you know, use using statements. You can load assemblies. You can build up a large program just by typing away. You get instant feedback on what you've done. You can actually even work with GTK user interfaces.
Really?
If you're particularly crazy. So it's just like interactive Python, just with a better language.
So the idea being, presumably this makes it easier to write tutorials to show people how to use the language.
It does, yeah. I'm thinking hopefully by now, if you've been to the Tux Radar site, you'll have seen the launch of the Hudzilla Coding Academy. If you're involved in that, guys, this C-sharp repo kicks ass. Go snag it. It's only in Mono 2.2. I think the goal ultimately is to be able to link into running libraries, assemblies, and debug them on the fly, which would be ace. That would be so cool. Type away, hit enter, it'll say no error straight away. You can just fix it and get on with life. That's a really great bit of software for Mono 2.2.
Oh, it's going to be in Mono itself,
it's
is
in
it?
Mono 2.2,
right.
Just released. It's called C#, the command line, which I think is so vague. I'm not sure why I've chosen it.
Well, it obviously can't be a hash mark at the command line, can it?
It's
a comment.
It's C-S-H-A-R-P.
Right.
Sharp.
I'll have to give C-sharp. That a go.
Give it a try. Only in Mono 2.2. I think you have to have a build after about September time to get it to work.
Okay.
But it's very cool, so I recommend it.
Sounds great. Graham, what have you found?
Mine is a sound tracker application called Renoise 2. It's been in development for a long time, and version 2 was released just at the end of last year. Amazingly, it did make it into our Soundtracker roundup of Linux Format issue 89. But it's the best of its kind I've seen. If you don't know what a Soundtracker is, it's an old school way of writing music for
Octomed.
Well, thinking like Octomed.
Yeah, exactly.
Numbers flying up the screen. And
It was designed for creating music that could fit into a minuscule chunk of memory.
Yeah.
And as such, it's basically just a list of numbers, a list of numbers for notes, simple arpeggios, velocities, things like that. It's actually a very cool way of composing music. It creates classic 1980s, mid-1980s style computer music. But Renoise 2 is a lot better than that. It has MIDI, it has automation, it has as many tracks as you want, it can play samples, and all of this is combined within a single window. It's easy to open it up, start composing. It doesn't take that much CPU resources, and it's brilliant. It really brings to life the Soundtracker environment of 1986.
And there are loads of mods out there as well, aren't there, you can use and you can play around with and take samples from.
Yeah, I think it works on an 800 by 600 screen, even lower than that, so it'd be quite cool on some of the larger netbook devices.
Ah, portable music composition workstation.
I think it would be feasible. I haven't tried it.
Great.
Of course, the real question is, does it run on Linux? No, that's no. Is it free?
No, it's not. It's commercial.
Dodgy that. Commercial software has its place.
But if you're looking for good mods, go and check out Big Jim's Voyage to Eternity. That's one of my favourite mods from the old days.
Is that like from the Amiga days on Aminet or something?
Maybe slightly after that, but not far off, yeah.
Right.
It's classic mod awesomeness.
Right, so that's audio software from Graham. Not much of a surprise there. My discovery of the week is a program called MyPaint, which sounds really numpty. But I like this because...
You're a numpty.
Yes,
yes,
absolutely. Yes. You've heard it first here. Because it's all about drawing. So, you know, the GIMP gets a lot of flack, its interface being quite complicated, and it's, you know, organized around filters and cutting and cropping stuff, whereas MyPaint is just about painting. It's only a 2.5 meg download. You need to use sconce to build it, which is a bit fiddly. But anyway, it comes with 83 brushes like charcoal and pencil, and you can create all these cool effects. There's a felt tip brush that when you draw and you move the mouse faster, the line gets thinner. It's only at version 0.6 right now, but it's looking really good, and it could turn out to be better than the GIMP for actual drawing. So the URL is mypaint.intilinux.com. That's I-N-T-I Linux.
To be fair, I think drawing on a piece of paper and scanning it in is better than the GIMP for drawing.
Really? That's how bad it is.
Yeah. I find the GIMP rather tricky to get my head around.
It's tough, yeah. And the GIMP hasn't really faced much competition
ever.
Over the years. Well, there's been... what's the KDE one? Krita. Right?
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good, actually.
Let's not forget Tux Paint.
Of course, Tux Paint for kids. So, at last, the GIMP having some sort of competition, at least in the drawing field, will hopefully kick them into touch for GIMP 3.4 whenever we're going to see a proper new release.
I found that you can fly direct from Bristol to Valencia with EasyJet. It sounds at first completely unrelated to free software.
Damn right it does, yeah. Explain yourself, fool.
Well, I always used to fly places on Ryanair because it's cheap and they get you from A to B, and I don't mind, you know, landing at stupid o'clock in the morning or, you know, somewhere a little bit outside of the town I'm going to. But then they wanted me to install Silverlight, and I obviously can't do that running Linux and a Mac.
Was that to make a booking?
That was to look at the map.
Oh, right.
That was just to look at the map, just to see the destinations.
JPEGs so, out, Silverlight in.
Lame.
Absolutely. It seems like taking something simple and making it complicated just for the sake of it. Someone's obviously sold them a package and said, hey, Microsoft, Silverlight, it's the future.
Couldn't you have used Moonlight, the Linux equivalent?
Is it finished? Is it ready? Do I want
is it secret? Is it safe?
Do I want to go to the hassle of downloading and installing a plugin just to look at a map?
No, right.
Not really.
So what did you do, Andrew?
I went somewhere else.
Well, that's an important message for the corporate monkeys out there. You can drive customers away.
Yeah, you voted with your feet because they were trying to use some silly software.
Were you going to Valencia before, or was that just one of the only destinations you could find on the map?
Just browsing holiday porn because it's really cold outside and I hate being in the office when it's dark.
When I heard holiday porn, I didn't think of that. holiday lusting, I think is what you're trying to say.
Holiday titillation without the gratification of actually being there.
There we go.
Like window shopping for holidays. Yeah.
Okay, enough of that nonsense. Let's have a reminder of what's still to come. The open ballot on Mono. Is it good or is it evil? And of course, the fantastic, amazing, awesome subscriptions deal with Linux Format Magazine.
Well, you heard it earlier in the show. Mono, is it evil or is it not? I should point out that this is our open ballot, so we're not just listening to the views of the people sat around this table. We also want to know what you think. So go to tuxradar.com or the Linux Format blog and register your views. We want to know what you think.
Yes or no.
We want to know yes or no. Is Mono Satan's semolina, or is it God's goulash, or Jesus' jelly, or possibly inappropriate?
Yeah. We're going to get some hideous emails now. Flames. That was Andrew. Just email them direct to him, okay? Email them right to his address.
To clarify for listeners in Bradford, we're not talking about your local alternative music fanzine. This is the open source implementation of .NET, produced by Novell. Novell got a lot of people's backs up back in November 2006 when they signed a non-suing agreement deal with Microsoft. So, Paul, does that make Mono evil or not?
I'm a huge fan of Mono and a big fan of Miguel de Icaza. He's a very smart man. I know he gets flamed to pieces, but he's very switched on and really eager to embrace the technologies like Mono and .NET.
So that's a yes?
That's definitely a yes, yeah.
A yes.
that's a reaffirming, life-affirming yes. Go, Miguel.
Mike?
Well, I haven't done as much programming with Mono and C# as Paul, but I have done a bit, and I really, really like the language and the supporting libraries. And I think it's worth mentioning that the language is, C# is an ECMA and ISO standard, and we've got to be careful of this knee-jerk reaction that, you know, everything Microsoft does is evil or bad. Perhaps sometimes they can do something good. Now, ultimately, you know, we want free software to win. We want Linux to win and succeed. But so far, I haven't seen anything to get too perturbed about. You know, Mono is an independent implementation. I don't think it's on potentially shaky ground like React OS, you know. So I like it. I'm for it. I'm for Mono.
Graham, are you the Mono fan?
Well, as I seem to be playing the role of devil's advocate in this particular program, I'm going to say no.
In this particular life, man. Your job in your life.
I'm going to say no. I do like Mono. I like .NET. I think it's a great accomplishment. I think it's one of the best things Microsoft has developed. But I don't like the fact that we're not in control of the standard. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But I personally haven't touched it all that much and would rather choose a more open language.
Do you use any Mono applications yourself, like FSpot?
I don't actually, but I wouldn't. I would use them if they were useful. Yeah, I haven't really got a problem with it. I just wouldn't be too keen on investing my own personal time in learning about it.
But why do we have to be in control of the platform in that respect? I mean, I know it's important, you know, to some people, but if, let's say, .NET 4.0 comes out and says, okay, forget everything we've said so far, here's something completely different, we can just rightly say, actually, no. What we've got is fine. You know, all the .NET 1.0 stuff still works just fine. All the applications written for .NET 1.0, 1.1, 2.0 carry on working for a long time.
I really agree with that. Yeah, I think trying to chase Microsoft and constantly looking at making programs cross-platform.
Yeah,
that's a kind of separate issue. The fact is, here
it's an optional side benefit.
Yes, exactly. We've got a good language here and a good set of supporting libraries and the frameworks, and that to me is the most important thing. You know, whether running around trying to say, oh, we must match Microsoft exactly on all these little points. If for people who want cross-platform portability, that's great, but I just like the language.
So we then have two distinct technologies if that happens.
Yeah, we do, yeah. We it's important to be in control of the platform we have right now, but not the platform in 3 years' time. I say, if they change it all, it doesn't really matter. Tomboy, Beagle, just as great, just as beneficial to the desktop as it is today.
Yeah, well, we can look at it that way. Think, well, we've got a popular, decent programming language and a good set of libraries, and it's and the research and development was initially done by Microsoft. Win.
They've paid for it.
Yeah. Yes, they're helping to making the platform more versatile.
What do you think, Andrew?
I think you can see further by standing on the shoulders of giants, and if those giants are evil giants, it doesn't really matter. You still see further. Mono works. It works. It's free.
But then when that giant runs away over the hill, you no longer have that height advantage.
From the blog, some comments. Kieran says, control of the standards is important, and in this case it looks like Mono is always going to be one step behind the official implementation. You intimated that that's not that important. If we have control of it now, that's all that matters.
Absolutely, yeah. Obviously it's always going to be one step behind Microsoft. If we want 100% Windows compatibility, MS will... it's in their interests go out of their way to make that very painful. You know, they don't hang around with new standards. They release things again and again and again. I think .NET 3.5 is already out. 4.0 is coming soon. We're always going to be chasing them if 100% compatibility is the goal.
This is the embrace and extend methodology, isn't
well,
it?
Well, no, they can't embrace it and extend it. It's their own technology. They can do what they like with it. But to be fair, Mono has embraced and extended .NET. They've got a whole Mono namespace. They've got GTK stuff for Mono, SQLite, all these kind of things. All work really, really nice.
Yep. Person B says he loves the apps and C# is the best language ever. And yes, he likes the Windows compatibility. Person B, that could be a chap or a chapess. Matt BD says, I was a little cynical at first, but I tried C# as part of the You Can Code Linux format special and really liked it. I'm really glad Mono is there so we can use it on Linux. If you don't like it, you don't have to use it. That's a sentiment echoed by Richard Stallman. I found a speech of his online that he gave in Zagreb a couple of years ago. He says, there's nothing wrong with Mono.
That's definitely right to the point. Big shock horror for Richard Stallman.
There is more, obviously. There's the usual guff about fascism that Stallman comes out with. Mono is a free implementation of a language that users use. It's good to provide free implementations. We should have free implementations of every language, but depending on it is dangerous, and we'd better not do that.
I think part of the problem that one of the chaps said, that Matt on the forums said, if you don't like it, you don't have to use it. Mm. It's true from a developer's perspective. If you don't want to use it, great, use Java, that's now open source. Use Python, you choose, I don't really mind what. But many distros are now shipping it as standard, often with applications depending on it, shipped as standard. And I can see why it's actually a bit of a pain if you disagree with Mono. If you don't want Mono on there, if you see it as a blight in your system, you have to actually go to some work, some effort to get it away, get it off your system. And that could be a bit annoying.
Surely you can just choose not to use those applications. Don Areo says he does not use any Mono apps. He doesn't use Beagle, doesn't use F-Spot, or the awful Banshee. They all have...
But is that because the applications
they all have alternatives.
He doesn't like them? Or doesn't like Mono. I mean, Mono doesn't make your applications much better, it just makes them easier to code.
Well, he does mention that he thinks the applications created with Mono and C# are lacking in functionality.
Okay.
So that's his primary reason.
If you don't like Banshee, you can use Rhythmbox or...
Sure. Well, the thing with Banshee is I've watched it develop at a lightning pace. It's incredible the features they're adding over time. Now, fair enough, he doesn't like it, doesn't like the features or whatever, something holding him back from switching, but it's a very impressive speed of development. And it's like these people behind it are excited again about being able to code and have fun and not worry about the boring coding stuff. You know, garbage collection. Just done for
exactly.
You nowadays. Do the cool things. Do the features. And they can. So I think ultimately, unless people have a big rebellion against Mono and C#, I think we're going to see a lot more C# applications on the desktop through Mono.
Those applications you mentioned, they're from years ago. What new is there in the world of Mono?
Well, it's interesting you say that, Graham. Because, of course, I'm just about to release my fantastic game, Brain Party.
Brain Party, did you say?
Brain Party, yes, that's right, Mike. Which is, yeah, thanks, Graham. Which is written using C#. And it's very cool. It was originally written for the Xbox using XNA, DirectX stuff. I've fiddled with it, made it OpenGL using Tau, which is a great framework. And it just works. The C# was completely cross-platform. That's how awesome Mono is. It's gone from Xbox to Linux in about 24 hours. Yes. Have it.
Well, I can't possibly respond to that.
If you'd written K-Album in C#, would it be finished by now?
So to sum up, 10 out of 10 respondents on the blog, 70% are in favour of Mono, only 3 are against. Around the table?
Yes, I'm in favour of it.
I'm not in favour of it.
I'm absolutely in favour of it.
Brilliant.
I have just quickly some quotes from Roy S. Shestovitz, the guy behind boycottnovell.com. Obviously, the name of the domain gives away what he's going to say, but he makes some very important points against Mono. He says we have to worry about the control along the lines of it will develop alongside .NET, therefore MS is in control of it. It makes us dependent on an outside force, with the worry there being that Mono sits beneath many applications. So if Mono disappears, we lose a great amount of functionality. Of course, there's software patents, always a worry, patents if you're in the US. There's Java and Sun, which of course MS is still out to destroy. And DRM, which is a big thing in the Moonlight, Silverlight clone, because it comes with a license to use the Windows Media audio video codec stuff, which also brings with it all this closed source horror. So Moonlight has an exclusive license to use this DRM, this Windows codecs.
So these binary bundled codecs.
Yeah,
they come.
Yeah, so you install the free Moonlight, and then to watch a movie, it prompts you with a codec license agreement to use. Yeah. So he's got, you know, he makes some really good points, and of course he quotes from what have become the Plamondon files, which is a leak document from Microsoft, which has been confirmed by the guy who wrote the document in the first place, from a developer relations group whose job it was to evangelize Windows development in general. And he says in the document, every line of code that is written to our standards is a small victory. Every line of code that is written to any other standard is a small defeat. Total victory is the universal adoption of our standards by developers, as this is an important step towards total victory for Microsoft. And that about brings it to the end of our podcast for this week. If you go to Tux Radio.
Oh, but wait, there is one more thing.
Take it away, Mike.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Paul, but this is just a quick tip I found earlier this week. You know, sometimes when you're in Linux and you try to eject a CD or a DVD and the damn thing doesn't come out at all.
Yes.
And you can't work out what you're trying to do, what's going on. Well, what usually happens is that there's some errant little process in the background that's hogging the drive. So, open the terminal, switch to root, and enter fuser, all one word, F-U-S-E-R, -k, and then the path to the drive, like /media/CD-ROM. That will kill all the processors trying to access the drive, and you can pop out the disk. It's great, isn't it? You bet you never knew that one, Graham.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, so that about wraps up for our podcast this week. Hopefully, if you've made it this far, you want to hear our awesome subscriptions offer for the Linux format. It's a great magazine, obviously, we'd say that because we write for it. If you go to the URL www.tinyurl.com/podcastlxf, you will get a fantastic subscriptions offer. If you're in the US, for example, it's just $99 for 13 issues. That's about $7.50 for an issue.
That's good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So damn good.
Wonderful.
Yeah, if you're in the UK, you save 43%. If you're in Europe, you save 24%. And everyone else saves about 17%. So massive savings. Check out the URL. All the notes for this podcast are, of course, available on our website, tuxradar.com/podcast, I think. And, of course, you can tune in 2 weeks to get the next episode of the podcast with more news, reviews, and nonsense. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.